more minutes with Guy Davis.
Digesting the story.
I did wonder as I watched you, the Tibetans have a wonderful notion that you can really experience all the things that have happened in a place over time. So what was this place before this was this building? What was this place before this town was? What was this, the sanctity in their view of a place? And as I watched you, I was thinking also of the sanctity of your own experience and wondering how much growing up in an entertainment family with Ossie Davis and Ruby Dee, my goodness, and surrounded by people like learning to play the banjo from Pete Seeger and. How much of that, if you will, enculturation is living in you as you're in front of folks spending an evening together?
Well, to misquote a friend of Pete Seeger's, I'm so full of acculturation that I need a laxative. Yeah, that was Lee Hayes who took the original on that. He couldn't help but catch some of it growing up because mom and dad, just like this room, I don't know if the cameras can see it, there was a library here. Yeah. And it was a big library in our house. And there were books all over about everything. My dad, I found out later, even strategically placed books that had anything to do with sex and photos
they
up on
hot.
The top shelf because he knew I'd find them.
Wanted you to learn from them. So hide it so the kid finds it.
Yeah, so I pulled myself up by my bootstraps toward the sex shelf. Just being with my parents, they were both storytellers and people who had other folks coming in and out the doors, whether I was home or not. Sometimes people like Paul Robeson would be there. Malcolm X would show up there. Huey Newton of the Black Panthers would show up there. Dr. Martin Luther King's father, Daddy King, showed up, actually not there, but at my grandmother's house years later because he was preaching in the neighborhood and heard that my grandmother made the best greens.
Good reason.
So let's just say it's all over. You'd have to like never move and sit in a bubble to not fall over the culture that was in that house.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And probably sometimes make that room immaculate.
Oh, gosh. Yes, the concept, immaculate conception of a clean room. Never happened with me.
The thirst people have for what you do seems somehow to be greater. I look at the bookstores that for a long time, the little bookstores were going out of business and the big box bookstores. Well, the little bookstores are coming back. People want to talk about life of within books. The downloads probably make it more accessible to be in relationship with other people who love that kind of music. I get a sense, after 40 years in the wilderness, I stole that line from somebody else before he stole it from the Bible, there's a sense that we have real possibility. And I credit my great President Obama for giving some of that sense of hope out of 40, 50 years of feeling pretty constrained in the United States. There seems to be, and maybe some of it's just the demographic shifts, but I'm sensing some real hopefulness, and I kind of get that sense from you, too. Are you seeing that?
I think that Bill hit it last night when he said to me, and this morning, that live performance is what it's about. I mean, the records and the DVDs and the books are great. They let us know what's there, but it's the performing of it that really lets that energy flow. And we were meant to hear stories and to tell stories and to pass them along because that's who we are. I have known such wonderful storytellers. I've even taken one as a mentor, even though I never formally asked him. Same with some musical people. There was a man named Brother Blue who had a doctorate in divinity, but he wandered the streets of Cambridge, Massachusetts, wearing all blue with ribbons and balloons tied to himself, telling stories. He got a grant to do that. And one of the stories he told, I felt it was about me. And I'm not going to do the whole thing. The story was called Muddy Duddy, about a boy born on a thunderstormy night, and he loved the mud. And so every chance he got when he was old enough to do it, he'd get out the window, he'd go get mud, put it on the windowsill, climb back inside, bring the mud in, make a little animal or something out of it, and hide it under his pillow. And it was delightful, and then his mother would find it, shriek in horror, whip his butt, and tell him not to do it again. And then over the years, he's building and building and building, and you know, the mud things. And happens at school, he puts mud in his pockets during a rainstorm, goes to school, and when recess is declared, they pass out paper and crayons. He rejects the crayons, puts the paper on the floor, takes the mud out of his pockets, throws it down, he's in it. He gets all but thrown out of school. And then finally, he has a dream that says that he should do what he's doing. And the next time it storms, he goes out, gets mud, and he builds a bird. But this time, something different happens. The bird sings. So I've always felt that that story was for me. And that there's a story for everybody. And it can be found through music. It can be found through story. It can be found through a person building something with a hammer and a nail. There is a story, and there's a song for everybody. That's what I feel.
There's something else you do that, to me, has become more and more important, and that is you alone on the stage.
Very daring.
Well, it's ancient. It is much more intimate. It is much more human to me. I grew up in the transition from a guitar, a bass, and a drum, and a little bitty amplifiers, to the walls of sound. A stage is bigger. They had to put them in football stadiums, not just because of the crowd size, to support the price of all the staging that went on with it. It stops being music; it becomes a spectacle. And in some ways, what you and artists like you have accomplished is stripped away the noise, and gotten back to the music.
Well, you got to understand, in those stadiums, it's advertisers who are making the money.
Oh, yeah.
And like you said, it's a spectacle. Well, nothing wrong with
it. And the music is not very good, by the way. The acoustics are terrible.
That's true, but you're there with all your friends, and you see somebody 5 miles away across the field. Hey, Celia, want some beer? Well,
it's just a different experience altogether.
Yeah, I have experienced working in a nightclub that specialized in magic, called close-up magic. And it'd just be a room full of maybe 60 people and a table, and a guy would be sitting at it making things appear and disappear. That was the best I've ever seen. David Copperfield can keep his zillion-dollar contraptions and whoever these other guys are. I like to be there in front of people and tell the stories, even if it's just in the strings of the guitar, to tell those stories. Now, if somebody gives me a job tomorrow in a stadium and puts a few million dollars in my pocket, and I have to advertise yodels, well,
so be it.
I got the yodel blues. But it's so that I can come back up here, man, and hang out and play the real stuff.
Yeah. And we're so glad that you did, and also carved out some time for us. Guy Davis, you're a jewel, and the bird sings. That's a wonderful story. Thank you for all of them.
You are most welcome, and thank you for this coffee, too.
Guy Davis invites one into his vivid word picture of all the Earth's people in the final moment before the very first word ever was spoken. That great wellspring of life-giving breath is the space he seeks to recreate in every performance. Slip a glance at his eager audiences, especially when sitting in the midst of one, and you get a sense of differences dissolving, replaced by a sweetness rippling through the audience as they become one. We thank him for the songs and the life that sings them. I'm Paula Gordon. I wish you well.